I'll read the motion. This was the SDLP motion. That this Assembly, in accordance with Section 30 of the Northern Ireland Act 1998, resolves that the First Minister no longer enjoys the confidence of the Assembly, yes, and that she be excluded from holding office as a Minister or Junior Minister for a period of 6 months because of her failure to observe the terms of paragraph G of the Pledge of Office and the first paragraph of the Ministerial Code of Conduct. In that she failed to observe the highest standards of propriety and regularity in relation to the stewardship of public funds surrounding the renewable heat incentive scheme. For the last 10 minutes, I've been asking you for evidence she's breached the ministerial code and you can't give it to me.
No, I've said that that under the ministerial code, if you have given less than fulsome information or if you've given any information that was lacking in truth, in circumstances where subsequent information emerges, you are meant to notify and inform the Assembly accordingly. Yeah. That clearly
there's no
did
evidence
not happen.
That she's done that, is there?
Sorry, that clearly
there's
did
no
not
evidence
happen.
That she's done that, and you've jumped due process.
What do you mean there's no sorry, what do you mean there's no evidence?
You can't quote one iota of it.
Sorry, did she bring forward the further information to the Assembly? Did she fully inform the committee as to the real background to some of these things? No, she
didn't. Is
that
not for the inquiry to determine?
No, she didn't. Yes, and that's why whenever you're asking me to do any more, I'm explaining to what was the angle of vision and what was the perception, what was the valid position for MLAs to vote on and propose on back in December,
on
and that's what they did. Nobody was excluding anybody from politics. Nobody was being
from
excluded
her role
from
as
politics.
First Minister.
Nobody was being excluded from politics.
But in her role as First Minister.
And we were attempting to register that vote in the Assembly. A vote, of course, that the DUP were vetoing with a petition of concern anyway. So remember, this was about this.
So you were finding her guilty before any due process.
This wasn't about finding her guilty before any due process.
You wanted her excluded for 6 months.
No, this was about saying that in the circumstances with those questions, she should be
questions.
Yes, and they were serious questions. You exclude someone from their job based on questions? Sorry, Stephen, are you saying there weren't serious questions about RHA? Is this the Stephen Nolan who was puffing on every morning about the wonderful things he was going to do about RHA, how he wasn't going to let it go, and now you're saying there weren't questions about it?
I'm not suggesting there
were
not
questions. No, you're saying there weren't questions about it.
I'm not suggesting there weren't questions, Mark.
Here's what I'm suggesting. There weren't many answers, and there weren't many answers from Arlene Foster that were standing
up
that weren't contradicted by subsequent revelations.
I am suggesting that you
emerged.
Are unable to provide evidence this morning of where Arlene Foster has breached the ministerial code, something that you put into your motion in December 2016, and you tried to take Arlene Foster out of her job
questions. You don't think that's what accountability is about? Why do you think the mechanism is there in the first place to allow the Assembly table motions in those circumstances where there are such questions? That's accountability, Stephen, and it can operate inside the Assembly too. Accountability shouldn't just operate on the Nolan show, you know. It shouldn't be just who you decide has questions to answer or issues to go. Politicians are elected into an Assembly that is meant to be a chamber of accountability. Unfortunately, over the past number of years, the accountability role of the Assembly and the transparency in the Assembly has been hollowed out, unfortunately. There was an attempt in December by a number of parties to re-establish that and to reassert that. Now, in relation to the position you asked me about Arlene Foster
we are clear.
That we had an opportunity then to register that issue at its best height. Unfortunately, some of that was filched by the stance that Sinn Féin took in relation to opposing an inquiry and saying they wouldn't back the motion.
My goodness,
then they
you're
came along with a long
Sinn Féin.
Running.
How many
then
times
came along
mention
with a long running inquiry.
Are you worried about
we have
them?
That now
My
as a given.
Goodness,
now,
you're
the
obsessed.
Biggest challenge. Sorry, the biggest challenge we have now. Stephen, is the common challenge we have, which is to get an executive up and running,
therefore
an assembly
and therefore
up
the key question
running.
Follows, Mark. Will the SDLP back an executive that with Arlene Foster as First Minister?
Well, Arlene Foster can help in all of that by clearly acknowledging that the sort of questions that people were raising and were putting were not a witch hunt against her. They were a valid reflection of valid concerns. And
we've
I think if
that.
She shows... if she can fully acknowledge all of that in the context of what she is then going to have to do with the inquiry and recognise that, you know, when it comes to the inquiry, if there are questions about her evidence, then obviously all those questions would be turned
Mark,
about
Mark, I need
her.
You to be
if there's
succinct
acknowledgement
about this.
From her, if there's acknowledgement from her around those issues, I think people can focus on the key priority, on the key priority, which is get an executive and assembly up and running,
and that's
because
really,
we need to get a handle on Brexit. We also need to get on top of the budget and public and service issues that are now in crisis.
Exactly, and that executive up and running, some people would argue, not all, but some people would argue, is really important for this country because we do have public services, local decisions to be made around them. My goodness, we were talking about corporation tax yesterday and whether that should or shouldn't be cut. We're talking about our roads, our education, our health, all of those different issues. There are some people in this country want local politicians to be handling through an executive. Waiting lists are soaring in this country. What could the executive do about it? Absolutely nothing, while there is no executive. Which means that this question to you is a very important one. As Arlene Foster stands today, she is going to be part of the RHI inquiry, which may continue well into 2018. Is it the SDLP's position that they will not back an executive if, as Arlene Foster currently stands, she were to be in the office of First or Deputy First Minister?
Well, under the St Andrews Agreement, which changed the Good Friday Agreement, the only party who can appoint the First Minister is the DUP. Okay, unfortunately, that's the position. Under this, under the Good Friday Agreement, it was up to the Assembly to jointly elect First and Deputy First Minister with a choice of whomever. Anybody could put themselves forward as a joint ticket for it. So it was an open election. You'd be elected by the Assembly and therefore would feel accountable to the Assembly. Unfortunately, St Andrews Agreement changed things. Sinn Féin, the DUP, changed it so that First Minister is appointed by one party exclusively, Deputy First Minister by another party exclusively. Whenever I negotiated the Good Friday Agreement, we were very clear that we did not want, the reason why we proposed to Hunt was because we didn't want parties to be in a position of vetting or vetoing each other's appointments as ministers. That is not what we want to see. So when it comes to the priority of getting an executive established, unfortunately, we are not going to be in a position to be too choosy about who is or isn't appointed as ministers. For instance, we have a situation now where when the executive collapsed in January, we still didn't have a budget. We still didn't have a budget. Are we going to say Martin O'Meara shouldn't be back as finance minister because he never produced a budget or a draft budget?
Will the SDLP back an executive that is Arlene Foster as First Minister?
We want to negotiate a return of an executive and deal with all of the issues that need
to
be addressed.
And will Arlene Foster be a red line?
Including the issues around, well, how Arlene Foster addresses or acknowledges the valid questions that are there. Can be very helpful in this regard.
That statement means nothing.
It is one issue.
That statement means nothing.
Well,
what will be the priority for the SDLP? Arlene Foster dancing to your tune, or are you restoring an executive to this country?
Sorry, the priority for us is restoring an executive. I have made it very clear.
So Arlene Foster will not be a red line then, Mark. Is that fair to say?
Sorry. Issues, you're the person who's using the language of red lines. We haven't used the language
Could
of red lines.
Could you confirm that Arlene Foster will not be a factor that will prevent you backing an executive?
Sorry, for these arrangements to work, we need to recognise all of the issues and we need to deal with them all sensitively
and
delicately.
I'm going to move on to those issues.
And in a balanced way. Okay. We have not put any issue in the way of getting the executive back up and running, because we don't want halfway houses between direct rule.
Right.
We don't want to lapse into direct rule, particularly in the context of Brexit. For us, it is imperative to get an executive established again, get the Assembly up and running, because remember, that's the only way we can get the North-South Ministerial
Council
to work.
That an executive backed by the SDLP will be formed with Arlene Foster as First Minister?
That could well be an outcome of the negotiation. I do not rule that out. The best way of making that happen is for Arlene Foster to properly address and recognise that people who have raised these concerns and had those issues and
moved in the way
they did,
she would say that she's part of the RHI inquiry and let that make its determination.
And let's see what happens there, and let's also recognise that whatever happens, depending on the evidence she gives at the RHI inquiry or that other people give, question marks could seriously come back on her position
again. And they might not.
And on her role. Yes, I said they could. I said they could. I didn't say they would.
Yeah, but you didn't say they could not. So let's move on. Let's look at these issues. That you talk about.
It's usually taken as a given when you say it that way.
Will you form an executive if there is not a guarantee for an Irish Language Act?
Well, again, this is another issue that we have said we have not put down a red line on this issue or any other issue. We want an agreement that gives us answers and working answers on those arrangements, not another fudge or form of words. Because remember, what we got at St Andrews was what was a fudge. And
but that's a bit of a contradiction, isn't it? There's no red lines, but you don't want a fudge. Will you form an executive without a guarantee for an Irish Language Act? It's a pretty strict question, Mark.
Which gives us a clear way forward on that. And that should include an Irish Language Act here. It can also include other things. Because remember, we have indicated that at an east-west level, there should be arrangements dealing with all of the native languages in these islands and setting forward maybe a common platform, maybe even British-Irish legislation going through both Westminster and the Dáil to help support things in the broadcasting areas and things like that. So in terms of making sure that alongside an Irish Language Act in the north, that there are other arrangements that means that people can see this not in the narrow ground of our own arguments, but can see this in the wider cultural context of valuing the native cultures and languages throughout these islands. And that might make it more comfortable for many unionists who at the minute seem to have a problem in appreciating why an Irish Language Act matters to people.
I think the key words there that I picked up on are making sure. So will you demand an Irish Language Act before you form an executive, or are you happy to form an executive and then try to negotiate it?
No, sorry, we are working for an agreement for to make sure that when we have a new executive that it is clearly understood that an Irish Language Act will be part of the programme, the legislative programme of an assembly. Because we don't want to have a situation then where these things become hostage to which party becomes minister in which department or anything
else. So that's a must have. No Irish Language Act. No executive
We want an agreement that includes that understanding without doubts or difficulties or ambiguities.
So no Irish Language Act.
We don't want a breakthrough.
No
that
executive
is a breakdown
back
waiting
for the
to happen,
SLP.
Stephen. Sorry, that is not what we said. What we
that
are
is
saying
what you're
is
saying.
We want what we are saying is we want an outcome. Is it unreasonable to want an outcome?
I'm not,
that means
I'm
that this
not
issue
asking
is resolved,
if it's
Stephen.
Unreasonable or reasonable. I'm asking for your position, and it seems to me what you are saying is no Irish Language Act, no executive backed by the SDLP.
I'm saying what is the aim. Let's be very clear about
is
what
it
are
an
the
aim
objectives.
Or is it a must have? You're saying must have in one sentence, Mark, and then you're saying an aim.
Stephen, I'm the person who used the phrase
12
many
stone.
Years ago
I am
we shouldn't turn objectives
stone.
Into precon. Stephen, I'm the person who made the point many years ago that too many people in Northern Ireland make the mistake of making objectives preconditions.
So is it not a
precondition?
So is an Irish language act
not
a precondition?
It is not a precondition to the negotiation.
Because
clearly we're having
that's
the negotiation
not the question.
Without
the negotiation.
Without
absolutely. The question is an Irish Language Act a precondition for the SDLP to back the executive being formed?
It is a clear priority for us to get
priority is a word a politician uses when they're not going to insist on it. Is it a precondition
First of all, Stephen, if we don't get agreement on it, we're not going to get an Irish Language Act through an assembly because we won't have an assembly. Okay.
My goodness, Mark. Okay. Well, no wonder I get slightly frustrated. Please, can I ask again? Is an Irish Language Act a precondition for the SDLP backing an executive formed?
We are in those talks to secure an agreement which, among other things, will clearly give us an Irish Language Act as part of the legislative programme.
And if you don't get
assembly.
It, will you still back an executive? Answer the question.
Sorry, and remember, the Assembly will then have to debate that Irish Language Act.
Yes.
We will then have to go through all of the details of it and all of the amendments and all of the issues.
Yes,
and we will be arguing those then.
Will you back an executive
and
if there is no Irish Language Act?
And we want a situation where that is not going to be vetoed. And remember, that's where the whole question about the reforming the rules around the petition of concern are important, because that can ease the problem around the Irish Language Act, that can ease the problems around marriage equality and other things. So remember, the answer, we've always said that the source answer to a lot of these problems and a lot of these frustrations is getting the petition of concern back to what was actually intended in the Good Friday Agreement, which was screening to ensure equality and rights were protected, not a dead-end veto to prevent rights and equality.
Alex Kane tweets this morning, he says, I like Mark Durkin very much, but he says so much in such a short time that I often haven't a clue what his actual position is.
And what?
Let's move on. Paul,
I could say the same about Alex. I wish I had the time to come on every day and comment at my leisure in the way somebody like Alex does. Unfortunately, I don't. I get an interview like this where I'm being asked to answer questions, and you're trying to put words in my mouth.
Mark, I'm asking you questions about 10 times repeatedly to try to hear the words from your mouth as to what the answer is.
Let me try one more time.
Let me just try one more time. I wasn't going to, but I will try one more time. Mr. Durkin, is an Irish Language Act a precondition before the SDLP will back an executive? Yes or no?
We want an Irish Language Act to be part of the agreement and as part of the legislative programme of the Assembly. We want that as part of the agreement. And it's only one part of the agreement that we want
it,
to get.
So that people
know, so that people know that not only do we have an agreement for now, people know we have an agreement that is going to work and is going to sustain. People know that when it comes to the Assembly debating that Act, that Irish language activists are not going to find themselves having to apologise and explaining who they are and who they are not and what they are not.
More policy issues.
That
let's move on. Let the public decide how you've answered that. That's fair enough. Policy issues. More of them. Is a vote for the SDLP a vote against any change to abortion law here?
We have clearly opposed the 1967 Act, and we know that some parties in England have been dabbling with using Westminster legislation to extend the 1967 Act to Northern Ireland. We have made clear that we wouldn't support that. We have opposed that in the past in Westminster and will continue to oppose
even
that.
If
remember,
an expert
this is a
panel,
Westminster legislation.
Even if the expert working panel that was set up last year recommends a law change in cases, for example, like fetal abnormality, the SDLP will reject that expert working panel if it said that...
No, we're not. Sorry, we're not going to reject anything until we have seen it. Hold on. Let's be very, very clear. The SDLP, in defending against proposals to impose the 67 Act here, have also been very clear that we needed still to meet the requirements that were laid down previously by the High Court, that guidance was needed, that guidelines were needed, that even if the legislation didn't need to change, clear guidelines were needed. And we still don't have that.
Right.
So
there
are issues that need to be addressed.
Sure.
We want to make sure that patients and practitioners are not faced with difficulties that they didn't used to be faced with.
So that's why my question was specific. I'll remind you what it was. Is a vote for the SDLP a vote against any change to abortion law here? It seems from what you've just said that you might, depending on what an expert panel says, you might back a change in the law here.
Well, we don't know if it will back a change in the law or the terms in which it will back a change in the law.
But you might back a change in the law. Isn't that accurate?
No. What I am trying to do is, first of all, I am not going to have you put words in my mouth saying that we're rejecting any possible change or anything that comes from a report.
I'm asking if there is any chance of the SDLP backing a change to abortion law here.
Yeah, and just as when it comes to legislative change, we deal with the terms of the change itself. We deal with the language. Just as whenever there was previous language that used the word likely, which was very ambiguous and very elastic.
But you're asking people for a vote now. So for those people, and there will be some who don't, but for those people who want to vote for a party or a politician who is saying under no circumstances will we support any change to the law, it seems from what you're saying today that is not necessarily the position of the SDLP. You're going to wait to see what the expert working panel says, and then
we were among those who asked for the report of the expert working panel.
Okay. So you might support a change in the law depending on what they say.
Well, let's see what they say. You're positing the possibility that they will propose a change in the law. You're seeming to put more of that as a possibility than anything else.
They might not.
Let's await the report.
Okay.
The report was commissioned.
So you're waiting on the
request.
Well, we can agree on this then.
Let's await that report.
We can agree on this then. You're waiting for the results of the report before you decide whether you will back a change in the law.
Well, sorry. We don't know that the report will even touch on a change in
before,
the law.
No, they may not, but if they
respect the fact. Stop loading it in such a way that it is only about that report recommending a change in the law. We don't yet know that.
Why can't you say you're against any change to abortion law here?
because we have to wait and hear what experts are saying around what is needed. And remember, the question around what changes might be needed in terms of the guidance could be clear. Because it might be that there's no change in the law other than giving the guidance some sort of statutory status.
Okay.
So it might be that it doesn't touch on the law as in relation to abortion itself. It's just about giving statutory status to the guidance or whatever. Let's be clear about the range of possibilities
that
are there.
Your manifesto also stresses the importance of higher and further education. What is your party's plan for university tuition fees? Would you scrap them? Would you keep them where they're at in Northern Ireland? It's about 4,000 a year here, isn't it? Compared to 9,000 in England.
Yeah.
Or would you increase them a bit to plug the gap for university finances? What's your position on university tuition fees?
Well, first of all, this is a Westminster election. You're asking a question about the Assembly choices. Of course, the Assembly choices are constrained and conditioned by what happens at Westminster.
What's the SDLP's position?
Sorry, you're asking me about what are we saying would be the position in Northern Ireland. That partly depends on what ends up being...
I'm asking your party's position. Do you feel that you're campaigning for university tuition fees to be scrapped, kept where they are, or put up?
Well, obviously, if the Labour Party, for instance, get into government and abolish tuition fees, that creates...
Well, that's about the Labour Party.
The context of the choices in Northern Ireland are conditioned and constrained by what happens at Westminster, actually, in relation to...
You have put into your manifesto that your party is stressing the importance of higher and further education. Do you have any plan to scrap university tuition fees in Northern Ireland?
As we showed when we were in government before, we moved and we capped the fees that were being charged. We relieved many people from fees.
So what's your current
fees.
Position? You must have a policy.
And we actually restored
what's your
grants.
Party's policy on tuition fees?
Well, we do not want to see an increase in tuition fees. We recognise the tuition fees are there as they are, and we recognise that there is a serious challenge to funding higher education.
Therefore,
in
what's your
Northern
policy?
Let's remember, our policy is you have to look at what your budgetary situation is. You're the one who usually says you can't have a policy without thinking about how you're going to pay for it. I'm telling you, you're asking me about something that does have to be factored into a wider budget. Now, the Northern Ireland budget situation...
Has your party got any policy on whether it is promising students going to university what their fees would be? Is your party promising to keep them where they're at? Is your party promising to scrap them? Or is your party not making any promises to students at all?
Well, sorry, we cannot promise... Sorry, this is a Westminster election. You're asking me about an Assembly decision. We cannot promise to scrap tuition fees in the Assembly unless tuition fees were going to be scrapped at Westminster. Because, remember, that affects the Barnett formula.
That's why I'm asking party policy position.
Yes, and then if I ask you a party policy position, you will then say, how are you going to pay for it? Because you won't have the money, because if the fees aren't abolished in Britain, there will be no Barnett consequentials to Northern Ireland to cover those fees. So I am not going to make a promise in circumstances where we don't have the budgetary context to support promise.
Your manifesto makes some promises to public sector workers in Northern Ireland. You see, you do make promises. And you say that you're proposing pay recovery for civil servants. What's that mean?
Yes, because the fact is people in public services, not least in the health service and many people in education service, people doing frontline services, have been locked badly into the pay freeze. Many of those people had other pay inequities that were due to be addressed, going unaddressed while that pay freeze took place.
How many years would you go back?
We recognise that there is a morale problem there.
How many years would you go back?
What do you mean, how many years?
Well, pay recovery. Does that mean that you're going to backdate or...
No. We're talking about we are talking about restorative pay measures of meeting the silted up frustration and demoralisation that is there in so many. And we have said, and remember we said this whenever we were negotiating around the voluntary exit scheme, we said that one of the priorities for savings from the voluntary exit scheme, rather than just being earmarked to bring down corporation tax, should be to try to make good a lot of
the pay
frustrations that were there in large parts
and
of the public service.
And this will be a very popular policy, my goodness, for those people in these professions. You say that you're going to give a consolidated pay rise to teachers, nurses, midwives and other medical staff. How much of a pay rise?
Well, and it's clear that has to be negotiated as well.
You haven't worked it out?
Well, sorry, that is something that is going to have to be negotiated in
the
wider
context. How
much
of a pay rise are you promising teachers, nurses, midwives and other medical staff?
We are not promising a fixed amount on that because that is something that's going to have to be negotiated with the unions among us. No, because
so
we
it
can't
be
turn
nothing?
Around and simply... Well, sorry, we can't turn...
It could well, be 0.01%, could it?
Well, sorry, first of all, it would be a consolidated pay raise in the sense that we recognise that it is going to come to a point where it's not going to be just a matter of honouring whatever percentage rate is recommended by the independent panel for that given year, that we have to recognise that there has been the legacy of the pay freeze as well. We have to recognise that people in the health service, for instance, have been locked into serious disparities around agenda for change, things that haven't been addressed for a long time. We can't just be that when it comes to that, we tell them, well, forget about all the years that that was neglected and that you were left underpaid and frustrated. We're only paying you the 1 or 2% that an independent
right,
panel has recognised.
So you are going to. So how much would that be?
Well, that's you sit down with the unions and you work that out and you recognise
that. And you
that
haven't
in terms
worked out even close to what that would
of,
be.
In terms of what is
you've
affordable.
You've no notion even what that would be close
because,
to.
Because the principle here is we are recommending as a party that this is one of the things that we want to do at the executive level. We proposed it before at the executive. Unfortunately, it didn't happen. It didn't find favour at the time of voluntary exit scheme that we should kind of put these options on the table. But then before the executive, it wouldn't be just for us as a party because we mightn't be in the realm. Ministries that are doing
final
it.
Question.
It's for the
I didn't
executive
think...
with a collective budget responsibility, right. With a collective public service to try to make good these issues.
Final question, Mark. And if this can be brief, it would be great. I didn't think I was going to end this interview talking about pork, but your manifesto says the SDLP has campaigned extensively on the issue of pork exports to China. What sort of extensive campaigning has there been?
Well, look at the work of Margaret Ritchie. As a member of the DEFRA committee, for instance.
She's been campaigning extensively on pork to China?
Yes, she has. It's a big issue. You might find that, if I remember, if I got news for you, we're mocking Liz Truss as Secretary of State because she was talking about that as a big issue at a Conservative Party conference as the relevant minister there. So talk to the pork sector in Northern Ireland and you'll see that it is a big, you'll find that it is a big issue. And in circumstances, we're being told that post-Brexit, we need to be looking at opportunities for world trade and people accuse those of us who are committed to Europe as being obsessed with Europe and not recognising world trade issues. We do recognise world trade issues.
What a pleasure it's been to speak to you today, Mark. So thank you very much for spending the time with us a full
thank
hour.
You, Steve.
And I really appreciate it. Thank you. You can find a list of all the candidates standing here in the Northern Ireland Electoral Office website, aoni.org.uk. It's Stephen Farrey from the Alliance Party tomorrow.